This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with consultants Trey Orso and Scott Wilfong from opposite ends of the political spectrum regarding the move yesterday by Governor Jindal to block Common Core in Louisiana. The governor was an ardent supporter of Common Core at one point, and he got his superintendent of education, John White, on board, and now the governor has fled the coup. John White is staying right where he was. He's supportive, and the fight is on. Who has the mojo in this raging battle between the superintendent of education and the governor of Louisiana? We'll talk about that and much more. Also, Alan First, New York Times best-selling author. His latest work is Midnight in Europe. He's recognized as the master of the historical spy novel. Now the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633, your number. 877-217-5757 outside the area, and Inkstershow at WRKF.org. Today's news is dominated by Governor Jindal's move yesterday. Jindal orders end of Common Core, but state superintendent pushes forward. That's the headline from the Baton Rouge Advocate. Showdown. Bobby Jindal and John White, who once were kissing cousins, are now getting a divorce, and the question is whether Mr. White will keep his job as superintendent of education. But Bobby Jindal has, at least at this point, indicated he's going to do everything within his power to block Common Core. Trey Orso and Scott Wilfong with us. Trey, a Democratic political consultant of renown, former executive director of the State Democratic Party, and Scott Wilfong, one of the rising consultants in the country from the right, thunder on the right, and lightning on the left. Trey Orso, what's your take on this feud between the governor and the superintendent of education?
I think it's orchestrated pandering to the Tea Party faction of the Republican Party in New Hampshire and Iowa. I mean, look, Bobby Jindal was for Common Core before he was against it. He put John White in there at Bessie to be for Common Core and to implement it. Our schools in the state of Louisiana have spent the last 3 or 4 years preparing teachers, preparing schools, staff, curriculum, books, tests, everything, because this is what Bobby Jindal wanted. Now you have a very small faction of right-wing Tea Party types in primary states who are against it. So all of a sudden, Jindal, I mean, the chamber's for this, lobbyists for this, all the good government groups, are for, all of Jindal's folks back here in Louisiana that he has been aligned with forever are for this. And all of a sudden, now he can go to Iowa with a straight face and say, I ended Common Core. And the reason I think it's orchestrated is because John White is still at Bessie today. Look back at the history of Bobby Jindal's administration. Anybody who looked at him halfway funny was fired before the sun set that day. Oh, you file a lawsuit I don't like? I'm going to remove you from the board and get retroactive legislation to wipe out the lawsuit. Oh, you did this? I don't like this? You're gone. But no, on his biggest issue of the day, Jindal goes left, and White stands in the paper today and on the news last night, said, no, the governor's wrong. The law is on our side, and he still has a job today. You tell me this isn't orchestrated. It's clear as day to me.
Well, will he have a job tomorrow? Scott Wilfong, what do you think?
Well, I think the one thing I think that Trey's a little off base on, just me being on the side of the Republicans, Jindal's group, there's a lot of opposition to Common Core among grassroots conservatives in the state. Brett Guyman from Lake Charles, one of Jindal's biggest opponents, huge anti-Common Core guy, who said he would fight until he leaves the legislature to get rid of it. So there is a little more, there's a lot more opposition to it than you would think. But as far as the posturing, I mean, can we just get all this out in the open? I know a politician, I think his middle name's Hussein, that was against gay marriage until he needed to be for it. I know a young lady, not so young anymore, that might be running for president, who was against gay marriage until she needed to be for it. All these guys are going to take positions that are going to put them in the right posture they need to be in for what they're going to do. Is Jindal running for president? I'm sure he is. But let's don't condemn the guy for making a change on a policy position when both sides, Democrat and Republican, have done it through the years, pure pandering. So the president did it. And
so you're here today to put Bobby Jindal in the same category as Barack Obama?
No, I'm here to say that that's the reality of what politicians do when they get to the national level.
I thought I heard something else. I'm sorry.
All right, 297-5633. Frank, do we have the governor for yesterday when he went before the masses and said no go to Common Core? Here's Governor Jindal.
Bessie didn't follow the rules, and Park's not following Louisiana state law when it comes to selecting Park, selecting this test to be used in our state. So by requiring them to start that process over and actually follow the bid laws, follow existing state law, that gets Louisiana out of Park.
All right. He's saying the bid laws were not followed for the test itself. And John White, the superintendent of education, looking chagrined and I think sincerely chagrined at this turnabout from his boss, he responded vigorously to the governor's remarks. John White, do we have the superintendent?
The plan that's been committed to is the legal plan, and it will be executed.
All right. He says it's going forward. The governor says he's going to stop it. And late yesterday, the commissioner of administration, Christy Nichols, said that she would stop the funding for the test. So if that happens, I think the governor at least has won the first round in this 15-round heavyweight matchup.
Well, I think the governor is really responding, and again, I think this is where Trey and I are going to disagree mostly, is that he is responding to what he's hearing. I mean, I serve on a private school board here in Baton Rouge, and the number one question I've been asked from our parents, what are we doing about Common Core? We don't want Common Core. There is a large cross-section, and it's growing every day, of people that have realized that, you know, Common Core was originated. It was a bipartisan thing. In fact, probably there were a few more Republicans actually that initiated it than Democrats.
Jeb Bush.
Chris Christie's for it. You know, these guys. But again, those are the
mainstream type people.
Mainstream, yeah, big government, sure. Republicans who lose every presidential election. Yeah, we don't need another one as a nominee. So
you're right about the big when it comes to Chris Christie.
Well, absolutely.
Here's an email from Steve Winham, and it's W-I-E.
Yes, I know. Yeah, I apologize to Steve. It was another Windham that I was giving a hard time to last time.
He says, of all the publicity stunts by Governor Jindal, his position on Common Core is the most shameful. There is no evidence it can do anything to benefit our state or nation, and only makes political sense if the appeal is to the farthest of the far right, the same political segment that defeated the already conservative Eric Cantor. If you sit at your computer and do even superficial research, you'll see the U.S. continues to lag educationally among the countries with which we compete worldwide. You'll see Louisiana consistently ranking with a handful of other states at the bottom in educational quality in the United States. If you just look at these and a few other facts, you have to wonder what is wrong with the establishment of national standards, particularly if the means to achieve them is not a rigid curriculum.
Jim, let me address that. The thing that cracks me up about this, and I'm no education expert, but the people who are raising so much cane about Common Core, when you ask them what part of Common Core do you not like, they usually can't give an answer. They want to say it's a curriculum, but the truth is it is a set of standards so that we can compare children in Louisiana with children in North Carolina and North Dakota and California and other states. I also, Scott, sit on the school board of a private school here in Baton Rouge that happens to be a Catholic school. We had a few questions about Common Core from some of our parents, but the truth is the Common Core standards would allow us to set our own curriculum. So if our little Catholic school wanted to set up a curriculum that was 100% based on Bible verses and Bible teachings, Common Core allows us to do that as long as we can get our kids to the standards set. It's a set of standards. It's not a set of curriculum. And I think that's, Obama, he's trying to take over our local school. It's just bunk. I mean, it's just a ridiculous argument.
When you're talking about elementary, you might be correct on there. But when we're talking about high school, the ACT and the SAT are specifically now being geared towards those Common Core standards. So if a private school chooses not to teach in that curriculum, guess what? Their high school seniors are going to have a tough time making more than about a 20 on the ACT. That's where your problem's going
to
come.
It's standards, Scott. It's not curriculum. I mean, the schools need to set a curriculum that will allow their kids to compete on standard. It's just a set. When you reach a certain level in school, you should be able to do A, B, and C. So we know if a kid in Louis, and look, last time I checked, I mean, we do some things well in Louisiana, but our public school system could use a little work. And God forbid that we try and see where our kids stack up with a set of standards to schools that have excelled in education. I mean, that's the whole thing. That's the reason why the United States Chamber of Commerce and all these Republican conservative governors from around the country, including Bobby Jindal, were always for this, because it set a set of standards without meddling in the local curriculum.
All right, 297-5633, your number, 877-217-5757 for Scott Wilfong and Trey Orso on opposite sides of the political spectrum. And for the moment, we're discussing Common Core. Charles on North Foster, good morning to you, Charles.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning to your guests. I find this discussion sort of it's actually hilarious, because if we were talking about financial investment, Stanford, and so forth, we have the guys on the right saying the government failed because it didn't uphold standards. But here we're trying to improve the nation through a set of standards to give our kids a chance to compete in a global economy. And the right is saying, no, those standards are taking over our lives. Maybe Scott can help me to understand how you can have both of those positions and call yourself rational. I'll hang up and listen.
Sure. It's actually a very good question, and I'll tell you the answer is that we don't oppose standards as conservatives. But it's interesting, we referenced earlier about the decline of the United States in relation to the world. When was the U.S. Department of Education set up? Somewhere around the 1970s, somewhere in there. When we were leading the world in our education is when we had local control and local standards and states deciding how to educate their kids. Suddenly Washington gets up there and decides, well, we know better how to do that. Well, let's see, since the mid-1970s, which was when I was born, we've done nothing but decline. So you're going to tell me now that more national standards is a great idea? I have no problem with standards or even a common set of them. But all we've seen is failure out of Washington. All we've seen is corruption. And we've seen a complete disregard for parents. I know the head of the teacher union in Louisiana 2 years ago said, if you're poor, you don't have a clue how to make educational decisions about what's best for your kids. We need to do it for you. So for the Democrats out there listening, your party thinks you're
exactly
too stupid to handle your kids.
But do you want to respond, Trey?
Well, I was just saying that this set of standards did not come from Washington. It came from the states. Now, I can guarantee you, Jim, I bet you dollars to donuts, if George Bush was still president, these guys would be fawning over Common Core. It'd be the best thing in the world, because his brother Jeb was the leading proponent of it. But because the president happens to be a Democrat right now, oh my God, his government takeover. It's not a Washington, D.C. set of standards. These standards were set up by governors and by heads of school boards, school systems.
National setting. Yeah, the National
Governors Association. Well, golly, Scott, when you add a bunch of states together, it becomes a national thing. I mean, it's a group of states working together.
So we need the governor of Vermont to help us figure out what's best in Louisiana.
All right, Tim, well, let me tell you this.
If you go look at the schools and the results in schools in Vermont and compare them to Louisiana, we might want a little lesson from the governor of Vermont to help us improve our schools.
Well, then reverse it. Does Vermont need the governor of Mississippi telling them what
Tim,
to teach?
Tim on Blue Bonnet, good morning to you.
How are y'all doing?
Fine.
Good. I'm an educator in Baton Rouge, and I've never seen so much misinformation about something, an issue. I can't recall the last time. But there's really nothing controversial about the Common Core as far as the standards it teaches. It's just students will add two fractions, or students will make predictions. There's nothing controversial in them. I teach at the elementary level, and I've talked with people at the high school level. I am sensitive to the argument of I don't think this is a national takeover as has, you know, been put out there, but I am sensitive to it does possibly pave the path for the federal government to have excessive intrusion. But as far as this being an Obama plan or a UN plan, there's so much misinformation out there. Overall, I think the Common Core has been great. It is just a set of standards. It's a set of rigorous standards. I've talked to multiple teachers who all say that students have risen to the challenge, and after a year or 2 years of teaching it, they really like it. Thank you so much.
Well, you are right. I mean, it is not an Obama set of standards, but like any good big government program, he's all behind it. So, you know, let's don't miss the point of that.
We had your friend Mike Chittum on the show the other day.
Oh, yeah, Mike's doing well.
And I called him a rich Republican, and he said he lived on Social Security. Good government program. Big government program.
Very big.
the Republican of Republicans in Louisiana, the titular head of the party, Michael Chittum. We'll be back in 90 seconds with Scott and Trey. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Democrat Trey Orso and Republican Scott Wilfong squaring off on Common Core, and we might get them on a few other issues as well. But this one is first and foremost today, as Governor Jindal has stepped in the way of his superintendent of education, John White, who says he has the backing of the government to implement Common Core in Louisiana. The legislature certainly wanted him to. And in his words, John White says, two outs in the bottom of the ninth, and it's no time to send up a pinch hitter. Missy on Old Hammond. Missy, good morning. You're on with Scott and Trey. Good morning, Missy.
And there's talk amongst us that the data is what's in question here. And Dr. Jindal actually is maybe questioning the data. We were supposed to get those results on a Friday afternoon. We didn't receive them with all these emails and all this hype. We believe that a number of us believe that data was skewed to actually support whatever agenda is out there to make it look like it's better. I think what needs to be addressed is, why was that data delayed? Never in the past has that been the issue. And what happened? We haven't ever had any a reason. Why was there a big delay in getting the data?
All right. Do you have any information on that?
I missed the first part. I'm assuming maybe she's a teacher right. and is talking about the reports. I mean, the only thing I can say is that I have heard from a number of teachers as well. And, you know, that's where my opinion on the whole matter has probably been shaped more by educators than anything else. When teachers tell me this is a bad deal, this is dangerous.
Well, the teacher unions are against Common Core as a group, but
There
were releases yesterday from all the major teacher organizations, specifically the Louisiana Association of Educators and the Louisiana Federation of Teachers, and the leaders of both groups expressed concern about being thrust in the middle of a political dispute between the governor and the superintendent of education. It could be chaos in the classroom. Carolyn on I-10. Carolyn, good morning. You're on with Scott and Trey. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. I think it's sort of interesting that so many of the arguments against the Common Core are almost laughably illogical, although they are rooted in an American ideal of individualism and self-determination, which is laudable. But what's ironic is that the Common Core state standards are seeking to improve logical thinking in our students. In other words, they are written to try to encourage logical, independent thought and arguments that are based on reason. And what we're hearing against the Common Core is a lot of illogical argumentation.
Well, I don't know if they're just encouraging the students to think logically. I think it's fundamentally altering the way that you know education has been for 200 years in this country. And like I said, teaching the way teaching was done in the early 20th century, all the way into the 50s and 60s, we were the best in the world. We were producing educated, brilliant kids, and then what changed? How we did multiplication didn't change. How we taught division didn't change. What changed was a top-down approach instead of a bottom-up, and that's what this is. You're right. It's mostly from large Republicans, but National Governors Association, National U.S. Chamber of Commerce. How about Louisiana State Legislature? How about, you know, my state representative going to Baton Rouge and making decisions on how our kids are taught?
All right, Trey.
Well, I just think it's ironic that the same people who for years and years have called for higher standards, more rigorous schools, better education system, people like Governor Bobby Jindal have spent their entire political careers calling for higher standards, and we got to improve Louisiana. We've got to be able to compete with kids from other states. We're falling behind this. We need more and more, and we need it tougher. All of a sudden, they've gone the other way. I mean, mm-hmm. the same, most of the people who are raising Cain about it, they pull their kids out of public school to put them in private school to get a more rigorous education, a better education. Now they have these standards that are trying to lift up public schools and so that we know where our kids are competing against kids in the state and out of the state. And all of a sudden, because you have a faction of the Republican Party who is instrumental in Republican primaries in key states such as Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina, these people are banging the drum really loud. And our governor has flip-flopped to appease a small faction of Republican primary voters. That's what a lot of people believe.
John in Lafayette. John, good morning.
Morning. If you have aspirations of your child going to a quality university, he's going to have to, he or she's going to have to do well in the SAT or the ACT test. Those two tests are now being geared towards a Common Core curriculum. We're going to be here in Louisiana having even a greater disadvantage because the kids are not going to be taught Common Core when they take the ACT and the SAT test, and therefore fewer of them are going to be able to get into these top universities.
Oh, that's exactly right. He is exactly right on that point, which is not unintentional. It's by design. That is one of the mechanisms that they want to force the states into doing this, because the ACT is the same in Seattle as it is in Baton Rouge. Yeah. So if your kid isn't prepared for the ACT, there's eventually going to be an outcry. Wait, you know, my kid, he's got to do well on the ACT if he's going to go to a great university. It's totally by design.
Why? I mean, so the states all volunteered to join this Common Core thing, so that if they're all going to start teaching to a Common Core set of standards, it would make sense that these tests go there. It's just that a couple of states, now Louisiana, if Jindal gets his way, have decided to pull. I mean, it's a chicken and egg thing. I mean, if all the states or 48 states are teaching the Common Core standards, why would they not then have the college test based on those standards, Scott? So now the ACT and SAT have moved over to get in line with what all the states have voluntarily done, and now our governor says, whoa, 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 we're not in for that anymore. The primary voters.
In three states, Republican legislatures, Republican-dominated legislatures, undid Common Core, mm-hmm. In Indiana, in South Carolina, and in Oklahoma. But Governor Jindal did not have a legislature willing to do that, so he is unilaterally deciding that it should stop.
Well, is it messy? Yes, this is a messy process. But what happened? What you had was a runaway train known as Common Core that nobody paid attention to until it was rammed down everyone's throats. Even I was surprised when I read that it was adopted. What, in 2010? I didn't recall that from 4 years ago in Louisiana. No one checked this out. Now, like I said, is it messy? Yes. But when our governor finds out that a mistake's been made, I'd rather him correct the mistake.
Bobby Jindal was governor in 2010.
Well, he signed on. He brought in John White to help implement it. I mean, people checked it out. This wasn't something somebody just popped up with on Tuesday morning. Say, hey, I think all the states should do Common Core. Yeah, that's a good idea.
And I think when a politician makes a mistake, I like when he's man enough to say,
the problem, Scott, the problem with, there's a lot of rhetoric. Common Core is a runaway train. Well, that's a good soundbite. But what part of common, what car in this train causes you so much trouble? The engine, the caboose, or somewhere in between? Tell me it's the specifics. It's a great soundbite. Oh, Common Core, national takeover, yeah, 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 runaway train. What do you not like about it?
I don't like who's steering the car or the train.
Jeb Bush, you against him?
It,
the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, are you all you going against business now?
All right, Mark downtown says, Scott, what reason should any citizen of Louisiana have for supporting Governor Jindal, who Mark says his entire motivation on any decision is based upon its effect on his presidential aspirations?
Well, I mean, that's just kind of an ad hominem attack. I mean, because he's running for president, he can't.
Kind of like runaway train.
No, that was a sound.
Oh, gotcha.
But, I mean, you know, because the guy's running for president, he can't be an effective governor. I mean, how long was Barack Obama a U.S. senator before he started running for president?
This isn't about time. It's decisions. And
well, I mean, I think what Bobby Jindal is saying without using these words is, you know, I kind of made a mistake. I didn't really look at this real close, but I'm going to fix it now. I'd rather have that. I can respect someone who says.
He didn't say that.
No, he didn't. But I think that's what you're seeing is he's saying, with all the evidence that's come to light now, we need to get out of this. We need to change things, and we need to make it a Louisiana-controlled program, which, you know, that's the answer to your question.
Louisiana still sets the curriculum, what the kids actually learn. we just have to establish a Louisiana specific curriculum so that our kids can reach these standards to be compared with kids from other states. They are not setting the curriculum, what the kids learn in the classroom. We are trying to achieve standards, which Bobby right. Jindal, throughout okay. his entire let's, career, let's has said we need better standards.
A few more people in on this, and certainly if the governor wants to enhance funding for any number of initiatives, perhaps higher education, steel cage match at the River Center with him and John White, Loser Leave Town.
How about him and Chris Christie?
It would be an enormous fundraiser. John and Livingston. Good morning, John. You're on with Scott and Trey.
Yes, we need to discuss the fact that the only reason why he really did this is because he was running for the vice presidency, and without that, we wouldn't have had the education reform in Louisiana. And I'll take my comment off the air.
Yeah, I mean, that's just not true. I mean, Jindal, you know, put a tremendous amount of his organization, his fundraising efforts, everything that he had into reforming education when he ran for re-election in 2011. He changed the legislature. He changed Bessie. He got his education plan through. You know, that's not – a governor doesn't do that simply so he can go to Iowa and give them one 10-second, you know, check mark on why they should support him for president. You know, does he have a national profile? Of course he does. But I don't think you can say that Jindal has been uninvolved as a governor in Louisiana. You may not like what he did. I'm sure there's a lot of teachers that don't like what he did, requiring them to be accountable. But that, you know, that's not because he's running for president. That's because he genuinely believed in it.
297-5633 is your number. Do you think John White will survive?
You can say that with a straight face.
You think John White will survive?
I think John White is able to go wherever he wants to go. I think
will he survive this job?
It depends on how long survive is. Is he going to be here in a month? I would think, yeah, I think he'll be here
he'll
in a month.
He'll make it till July 4th.
I think he'll make it to July 4th, yes.
Okay.
I do.
Trey?
If John White makes it to July 4th, it will just confirm my theory that this is the biggest stage thing in the history of Louisiana politics.
Kind of like when Joe Biden went on talking about gay marriage and then he trapped the president into coming out.
I've never met John White ever. I follow him in the paper. He seems like a highly intelligent guy. Obviously knows a lot about education policy. Mm-hmm. I suspect that John White could go just about anywhere in the country and get a really good job in a functional government or non-government position and not have to put up with the bunk that he's putting up with here. He is getting run over by the guy that put him there for political purposes. And if I was John White, I wouldn't let the door hit me on the way out. Who would want to put up with that? He seems like he's obviously very highly educated, motivated, skilled, and respected in the education community. I don't know why he puts up with it.
Well, it's two outs in the bottom of the ninth. He wants to throw a complete game.
Well, he's trying to do the job that Governor Jindal put him there to do.
He wants to be the Clayton Kershaw of Louisiana politics. Clayton struck out 15 last night. Will John White strike out the governor? 297-5633. Frank, I need to know who's waiting in line here. 877-217-5757 and inkstershow@wrkf.org. It is KC and Central. KC, good morning. You're on the air with Trey and Scott.
Good morning, gentlemen. I kind of feel bad for John White because he has to understand that the Bessie board is in the governor's pocket, and whatever the governor tells them to do, he will do. So I'd say his job is on a very short leash right now. The shame is that this governor once supported Common Core until he felt the political wind shift, particularly from the far right and the Tea Party, that suddenly turned against it, and so he's decided to line up with them. And I think that's really the only reason he's taken this tack. I don't believe that for a second that Bobby Jindal does anything without what it means to his political aspirations in the future. And as far as him being involved as a governor in this state, I think that's a sham. The only thing he's been involved in this state is as a dictator. And that's
a dictator. Strong words from KC and Central.
KC is not the only person in the state that feels that way.
Well, David Vitter, who John Bell Edwards, your candidate right now in the race for governor, he says he would be Jindal on steroids. That's how John Bel Edwards refers to David Vitter at the press club the other day when asked about Common Core. David Vitter says, I don't have a position. I don't know enough about it. Scott, were you surprised by that?
Well, I'm surprised he would say that. I mean, you're a United States senator, and you don't have a position on the single largest educational issue in the country today.
And he said that would be his major issue, too, education.
I think somebody didn't write David's talking points very well for that speech. But, you know, I do want to go back to what the caller said about, you know,
You want to get off that?
We don't need to talk about it. That's next year. The Tea Party, you know, I've heard that name spiked as a derogatory comment. You know, guess what, folks? The Tea Party is alive and well and taking names, kicking butt and taking names. I think Eric Cantor will tell you that. But it's not the Tea Party that is against Common Core solely. They are not. Mm-hmm. I think you just said the teacher unions are against it. So you want to talk about an odd political alliance there, the teacher unions and the Tea Party. And Governor Jindal. I mean, let's just remember that the Tea Party is not is grassroots conservative activists, the same people that you go to church with, that you go to school with. So if you want to disparage them,
I want to get Trey on this. What about Senator Vitter? Everybody in the country, it seems, has a position on Common Core, but Senator Vitter, who wants to be governor of Louisiana?
There are two things that I thought were pretty amazing about his appearance Monday before the press club. First was his complete lack of preparedness on issues of the day. I mean, Common Core, for instance, he really wasn't familiar, didn't know what his position was. The lawsuit, the levy board lawsuit, hadn't really looked into it, not too sure about it. I just think it's one thing to be a United States senator and be insulated in the Beltway in Washington and give speeches that are written for you in the well of the Senate and throw bombs and talk about big, broad issues. It's another thing to come back down to Louisiana and talk to actual people and have to field real questions and be prepared on a whole lot of issues. And David Vitter's a very smart guy. He's highly educated and he has he's a career politician, been there for a long time. I found it a little bit amazing that he was not better prepared.
Michael on Florida Boulevard. Michael, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Fine.
I have one question that's from a slightly different perspective. Does the final decision on Common Core affect in any type of way the funding that goes for the arts in our schools? Because as we know in recent years, that funding has been dwindling over time. So do you have any ideas or perspectives about that?
I think that would still be a local school board issue as to, you know, what to fund.
Dr. Jim Madden, a great mathematician who's writing from Maryland, listening online, he says when Common Core is dumped after several years of Louisiana getting ready to use it, what will we use in a couple of months? What are we going to do?
Well, I mean, there are curriculums in place. I don't think we'd have to go, you know, get somebody with a laptop and a staff of people to start writing new stuff. I think we've got stuff that we can use. It may not be what you want to use, but, you know.
But we'll use something.
That's right.
I mean something. It'll be something.
The world will turn.
Bring out the funny pages and study that.
297-5633. Back after this 90-second pause on WRKO. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. A few more minutes with Trey Orso, Democratic political consultant, former executive director of the Louisiana Democratic Party. He and his firm with Michael Baychok, they do work all over the country. And Scott Wilfong has emerged as an up-and-comer. Surprised you haven't been one of the 40 under 40 yet, Scott.
Well, you know, I'm not necessarily in with that chamber crowd.
Well, weren't you a 40 under 40, Trey?
It was a slow year for him, yeah.
if Trey was a 40 under 40,
if
certain.
I can make it, anybody can make it.
I've only got 2 years left to make it, so I guess I better do it.
Well, we're nominating you right now. Michael Jim and Melrose. Jim, good morning. You're on with Trey and Scott. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. It seems like most of the people who have called this morning have either been pro-Jindal or anti-Jindal. But I'd like to look at this from a different point of view. Everybody goes to make the point that it's a set of standards and not a curriculum, and that the State Board of Education or whoever's in charge of curriculums can make our own state curriculum. But look at this point. Louisiana is near the bottom in education in every aspect and has been ever since records were created. What makes anybody think that just because we establish a common core, a set of standards, that the people in charge of education are going to all of a sudden get smart enough to figure out what anybody's supposed to be teaching, and secondly, how to teach it? I mean, the whole thing needs to be looked at, not just whether you're for Common Core or against Common Core, or whether somebody thinks it's pro-Tea Party or anti-Tea Party.
Well, the biggest obstacle we encounter in reforming education in Louisiana is that people want to continue the way that it's always been done. And I mean, I'll give that point to the supporters of Common Core that, you know, things are bad enough, just like when Jindal did his plan 2 years ago with the voucher program. You know, I mean, how much worse can it get? How about we try giving parents a choice in education? How about we try this and see if it works? If it doesn't work, well, we're no worse off. Then, you know, the worst thing that might happen is a few failing schools might have to close, but I think we can do without those anyway. Common Core is, you know, it is at least something to try to do something better. I just don't like I said earlier, who's steering the train.
I think the point here is that it has been looked at for years and years. This is not something that just popped up this month. I mean, this has been going on for years, and we were talking at a break earlier. My biggest concern about it was that there are some parishes in the state that have been preparing to implement this for 3 years. They've been working on it, training teachers, training administrators, books, the whole thing, and they've been and they're ready. I mean, they're ready to go. It starts now. And there are other parishes in the state that have been laggard, so to speak, and they have not been preparing like they should. That's why I thought bill this year was so good, to delay it and give it a little time for some of these other parishes to catch up.
We only have a few minutes left, but certainly you two are worthy adversaries, but this is a big political year. You'll be involved, as I stated, Trey, in races beyond Louisiana. Right now, Nate Silver says it could be a tough year for Democrats. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, midterm elections are always tough with the party that holds the White House. And obviously, President Obama's numbers are not great right now. I mean, they're obviously never been great in Louisiana, but in some other states. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be a challenging year. I don't think it's going to be quite as bad. I think back in the wintertime, a lot of our candidates around the country had kind of bottomed out, so to speak. But in the last 4 or 5 months, at least from the polling I've looked at and the data I've looked at, it seems like the ship's righted itself a little bit. So I think it'll be all right.
All right, Scott.
I think it goes to, you know, who are you fielding as candidates? I mean, you know, like him or not, when the best candidate you can get for the 6th district is Edwin Edwards to represent the Democrat Party, I think you got problems. The other congressional seats in the state, it doesn't appear that any serious Democrat is going to run. You know, you've got Mary Landrieu as the top of the ticket, and at best, she's a 50-50
well,
shot.
A good Republican who's running, apparently, based on his appearance on this show last Friday, is Vance McAllister. Are you ready to embrace him?
The kissing congressman, yeah. Vance was elected with a combination
of... When you say embrace him, Jim, I don't know. I think you got to use a different
Vance
word.
Vance had liberals and lies that elected him. So there's another soundbite.
Well, Vance may return to the dance, and we shall see. But he scared Neil Reiser right out of the race, didn't he?
He did. I was quite surprised to see Neil not run, but that seat will go to another Republican not named Vance McAllister.
All right. Well, thank you, Scott. Thank you, Trey. Let's do it again. 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757, and we're pleased to have Alan First, an author of historical spy novels, the foremost one in the world today. He's been called an heir to the tradition of Graham Greene. He cites Graham and others as important influences in most of his novels in the last 25 years have been set just prior to or during the Second World War. He is noted for his depictions of Eastern European people and places during the period of 1933 to 1944. His latest book is Midnight in Europe, and it starts with Paris in 1938 as the shadow of war darkens Europe. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. Well, let's go to Paris, 1938, on the brink of the World War II. What was it like at that time in that beautiful place?
Paris was really the heart and soul of Europe. And the people there, there were a lot of emigres there, fugitives. It was the place where everybody wanted to be. Not only did they drink wine and eat well and make love, it was also an intellectual center. And the people there tried as best they could not to think about it, but they knew that a war was coming. And that conditioned everything else that happened. It certainly conditioned love affairs and the conditioned plans people tried to make because they hoped it wouldn't. It's one of those things where you hope it isn't going to happen, but here it comes and you know it.
In Midnight in Europe, you bring forward the character of Christian Ferrer, a brilliant, handsome Spanish man, a lawyer in the Paris office of a prestigious international law firm. He's a centerpiece of this book. Tell us about his involvement in Paris in 1938.
He is working at a law firm, and he is asked by the Spanish embassy to help with the arms buying office of the Spanish Republic. This is the Spanish Civil War that's going on just south of France. And what happened to the Republic is that they had to ask for volunteers from bright professional people. And he feels he has to volunteer. He's an emigre. He fled Spain when he was with his family when he was 12. So all of a sudden, he's involved with criminals and gangsters and other sort of unsavory types in the arms buying business.
And this was going on, not just in your book, but in reality in that place at that time.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There are books about how the Republic tried to buy arms. They couldn't buy them. They couldn't buy ammunition. They couldn't buy replacement parts for airplanes. And they lost the war. And the meaning of the loss of the war was this, in very quickly. If the Spanish Republic lost to the fascists, the war was a certainty. Had the forces of democracy, Britain, France, United States, become involved and helped the Republic, and they had won the war against Franco, there's some possibility that World War II would not have taken place.
The New York Times writes of Allen, the brilliant historical flourishes seem to create or recreate a world, a heartbreaking sense of the vast Homeric epic that was World War II and the smallness of almost every life that was caught up in it. You're fascinated with this time, and you've written about it as few others have, but how do you find a new way to tell this amazing story that we know as World War II?
There are two interesting things to me about World War II. Everybody is fascinated with it. It's fought out every night on the military channel or the history channel. We always win. Nobody ever stops watching it. There's a fascination with it. And the other thing about it was that it was an enormous war in terms of the geography of Europe and Asia, and it involved tens of millions of people, and it has hundreds and hundreds of stories. So in each of my books, I try to discover a new story that people might not have heard about and create a novel around the real historical story.
Question from David on Blue Bonnet. What is your favorite European setting? What your favorite European city?
Well, that has to be Paris. I lived there for 9 years, and it's simply a wonderful place. I don't need to tell people about it. It, along with the obvious museums and restaurants and all of that, it also has some sort of spirit that's been there for hundreds of years. And when you're there, it feels like no place else you can ever go.
We're talking with Alan Furst. His latest work is Midnight in Europe. Now, writing historical fiction is not an easy thing because you're combining truth with imagination, and you've done this time and again from 1933 to 1944. How do you integrate historical events into your novels?
It's the other way around. I start with a historical event. I read a lot and do a lot of research. And when I have the story I want, from that story, I see what the time frame is. And it's often in 38, 39, 37, 40, 41, those 5 years, when everything was very dynamic. And once I have the story suggests the characters. And then once I create the characters and they interact with the story, now you have a novel.
You came from a path that had you as a teacher, a copywriter. You worked with the Seattle Arts Commission, and then you went to Russia. And that was a life-changing experience. How so?
I went to Russia for Esquire magazine in 1983. I landed on the night that the Russians shot down the Korean airliner. And I had heard, like everyone else, I knew the words police state, but I had never seen police state. And you couldn't see it in Moscow that year, that month, and probably for a long time afterwards. And it's not like other places. It's very obvious what's going on. It's not subtle. It's a police state, and you see what that actually means. And it made me so angry, I guess you'd say, you know, passionate, that I went back to the United States finally. I remember when I landed on a KLM plane in Los Angeles, out on the tarmac. It didn't dock to the terminal. And so I came down the stairs. And this is true. I went down on my hands and knees and kissed the ground. Huh. I was real happy to be back in America.
You write a lot about intelligence, and intelligence gathering was much different. But I would imagine some of the methods and strategies, if remain the same through the decades. How was it in 1938 as compared to, say, 2014?
I think the major difference is that in 2014, intelligence gathering is immensely dependent on technology. Back in the 30s, it all had to do with humans, which is easier for me to write about because I don't know very much about the technology. I know it exists. But more interesting for a novelist is the human interaction that's involved when a person gets another person basically to betray their country for ideals or money or blackmail or whatever the reason.
In your book, your latest one, and in others, but in this one, it's certainly not a male-exclusive book of characters. You have some rich female characters on the pages, Maria Christina, Eileen Moore. How did you come up with such inviting female characters?
Just about the same way you come up with male characters. Who would have been there? What would she have been doing? What would she have felt about things? I think almost, maybe not quite equal, but very close, because people like to read about women as much as they like to read about men, and especially, frankly, women readers. I've been getting a lot of women readers the last 5-6 years who normally don't read spy novels. When I would be on tour and doing a book signing, they would come up to the desk with a book and they would say, oh, my dad's going to love this, or my boyfriend's going to love this, or my husband's going to love this. And my answer would always be, well, try it yourself. You might like it. So I've been successful in that way. But people like to read about people like themselves. It's just traditional.
Alan, you were born right at the outset of World War II in 1941. Do you wish you had been an adult during that time? You have such affinity for the people and the places and the conflicts that were going on? What would it have been like for you as an adult in that time?
Lord knows what would have happened to me. Because you can bet I would have been involved and would have wanted to get involved before Pearl Harbor in 1941, but would have certainly been involved as of Pearl Harbor 1941. And then after that, I don't know, because a lot of people, a lot of Americans were killed and wounded in that war. So you really don't know what would have happened. But I certainly would have been, you know, down to the enlistment office promptly. Simply because this was really a struggle between good and evil, and there was no question who was who. No question.
Vince Flynn says, "First is the best in the business." The latest work from Alan is Midnight in Europe. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll be back tomorrow. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.